Hi-diddly-ho, neighborinos, and welcome into the week six edition of Sunday Best. I'm your host, Jay Felicio, and whether it's your first time listening or you're a frequent flyer, appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to me talk about a game, To give you an idea what to expect, this show is a quick-hitting reaction podcast to the majority of the happenings on Football Sunday. I'm not going to hit all the games, I'm not going to hit all the players, but I'll hit the most impactful stories, the most impactful performances. I choose three games to go position by position. After that, I'm going to jump around the league with some quick hitters, some of the big stories, and then I'll wrap up with any injuries that have fantasy implications. And unfortunately, this week is another one with lots and lots. But you're going to get all this in 20 minutes or less, or your money back. And by money back, I mean Kohl's cash. First game we're going to jump into is the Broncos just squeaking by the Jets over in foggy London town, 13-11. We're going to start with the Broncos in the quarterback position. Bo Nix gave us another clinic of consistent inconsistency this week. His final stat line tells the story. 19 completions on 30 attempts for a meager 174 passing yards with a touchdown and an interception. He did chip in 24 yards on the ground. It's his third game under 180 passing yards on the season, and it's his fourth with just one single passing touchdown. Nix cost himself another touchdown by overthrowing Marvin Mims for what should have been a sure thing touchdown. He finished fine, but he delivered a warm glass of milk type of fantasy performance. As I said in my start set piece this week, if you roster Bo Nix, chances are you're probably going to start him. You just have to understand that while there is that ceiling, that upside, it's going to be some volatility and there is going to be some games that leave you scratching your head why you drafted the guy. J.K. Dobbins looked pretty meh, to be honest with you. Disappointing. He was supposed to eat against a Jets defense that was a top 10 fantasy matchup for the position, but he looked like he was running in quicksand. He ground out 14 carries for 40 yards, and he remains pretty much a middle-of-the-road RB2 with a decent floor, but limited upside. R.J. Harvey continues to get some passing work, catching two passes for 11 yards, but he only got two carries, and that's the problem. He's just not seeing the volume. Harvey is strictly a handcuff at this point. With inconsistent quarterback play, you get inconsistent receiver numbers, and Cortland Sutton was the victim this week, catching his only reception on the day with 4 minutes and 41 seconds left in the first quarter on just 3 targets. Now, he did have a couple called back by penalty. I still consider Cortland Sutton a high-end wide receiver, too. He's going to have some big weeks, but with the inconsistent play of Bo Nix, like I said, you're going to have some of these weeks. It's just something that you have to accept. Not something that I'm concerned about long-term with Cortland Sutton. With the inconsistency comes inefficiency. Troy Franklin tied for the team lead with 7 targets, but was only able to turn that into 4 catches for 19 yards, and he lost a pretty ugly fumble. There's no other Broncos wide receiver outside of Cortland Sutton that's consistent enough to consider anything more than a desperation flex. Evan Engram is a silver lining, securing 5 catches on 7 targets for 42 yards, his third straight game with 4-plus catches. I'd consider him a solid streamer, and he's starting to push tight end one status. Nate Atkins taught the touchdown for the Broncos, but that's a fluke, and he's not anybody that should be on your fantasy radar. Justin Fields had an absolutely brutal day in London. He finished 9 of 17 for a miserable 45 yards and 0 touchdowns. His rushing production had been his saving grace, but he was only able to get 31 yards on the ground on 7 carries. Justin Fields was sacked 9 times, and it wasn't all on the Jets' offensive line. Fields was holding onto the ball entirely too long. He was playing like a toddler who didn't want to share his toys. The Jets' offense was a disaster, totaled 82 yards, the lowest total in the league for the past 2 years, with a net negative 10 passing yards. Fields was off target and terrible all game. I wouldn't be surprised to see him bench for Tyrod Taylor as early as next week. His status as a starter is in serious jeopardy. Breece Hall looked fine, but the offense was just putrid. He had elite volume, 27 carries for 92 yards, and was able to chip in 3 catches for 13 yards on 7 targets, but unfortunately, he did lose a fumble. Hall has the skill set of an RB1, but this disastrous offense is just torpedoing his value. There have been trade rumors swirling around Breece Hall, and with the Jets winless, it might not be that crazy of an idea. An improved situation for Hall isn't the only takeaway. You might want to stash Isaiah Davis as well. With Braylon Allen on IR, if Breece Hall was traded, Isaiah Davis would become the starter. He's absolutely worth stashing if you've got some extra room. Garrett Wilson, who entered the week with the most receiving yards in the AFC, was completely neutralized. Pat Surtain shadowed him all day and held him to a season-low 3 catches on 13 yards. He was shadowed by Pat Surtain, who held the Jets star to a season-low 3 catches for 13 yards on 8 targets. He did also have 2 drops, one which really wasn't his fault. It got punched out, but still a drop nonetheless. This is another Breece Hall-like situation. Garrett Wilson has the talent to be a wide receiver one, but the inconsistencies of this offense are what's holding him back. His value would actually go up if Tyrod Taylor wound up under center. In one start this season, Tyrod Taylor targeted Wilson 13 times, turning it into 10 catches, 84 yards, and a touchdown. If the Jets were to make the switch, he would maintain that high-end wide receiver two status, and he'd be pushing for wide receiver one. Mason Taylor, who saw 25 targets and averaged 4 catches over the last 3 games, also got shut down, catching just 1 pass for 2 yards on 2 targets. Right now, he's nothing more than a risky matchup-based streamer, but he's somebody who should be rostered in all leagues. And as we move along to the games on this side of the pond, we're going to head over to Jacksonville, where the Seattle Seahawks took down the Jaguars 20-12. Sam Darnold continued to prove last season wasn't a fluke. He finished 16 of 27 for 295 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he added a whopping 2 yards on 4 carries. He looked good, he played with poise, and the offensive line gave him plenty of time. He was dropping dimes out there like his name was Danny, and he continued to push the ball down the field. He hit JSN with an absolute dime, perfectly in stride for a 61-yard touchdown pass, one of his 2 touchdowns on the day. Since Jacksonville came into the week as a top 10 fantasy matchup for quarterbacks, the good game isn't surprising. The low volume keeps Darnold from being a weekly must start, but he's a high-end quarterback too and a must start for Superflex. I don't know what to say anymore. I'm truly at a loss for words. The inexplicable usage for the Seattle backfield is just, it's utterly baffling. Kenneth Walker opened the game, 2 carries, 11 yards, and then Seattle decides they're going to go with Zach Charbonnet, who got the next 5 rushing attempts and gained only 10 yards. It was a disaster. The final numbers tell a maddening story. Walker had 10 carries, 34 yards and a catch, while Charbonnet had 12 carries for 24 yards and a catch. Walker is so obviously the better back. Saw 2 fewer carries, but gained 10 more yards. If offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak would smarten up and give Walker the work, he'd be a borderline RB1. But until then, this inexplicable, unexplainable, ridiculous split is going to keep both Walker and Charbonnet probably around flex value at best. Jackson Smith and Jigba was an absolute monster once again. He finished with the dominant line, 13 targets, 8 receptions, 162 yards, and a touchdown. He was making pinpoint cuts on routes, pulling off toe-tap catches, and burning DBs all day long. It was his 4th 100-yard game on the season, which is the most in the league, and that 61-yard touchdown pass that I talked about earlier was actually the longest of JSN's career. He's locked in as a top 5 fantasy wide receiver and a must-start in all formats. Period. End of story. For the rest of the Seahawks receivers, Cooper Kupp caught his first touchdown as a Seahawk, but only had 2 catches for 40 yards. He's nothing more than a desperation flex play who probably needs to catch a touchdown to get over double-digit fantasy points. Jay Barner, his 71 yards on 3 catches are a little deceiving. 61 of those yards came on 1 wide-open play-action catch. He's nothing more than a risky matchup-dependent streamer. Trevor Lawrence is in the same vein as Bo Nix, consistently inconsistent. He finished 27 of 42, 258 yards and 2 touchdowns. He chipped in an additional 9 yards on the ground. From game to game, from quarter to quarter, heck, from play to play, he'll go from flashing the brilliance that makes it so obvious why he was a number 1 overall pick, and then grossly off-throw a target that validates all the Lawrence haters' point of view. Lawrence and Brian Thomas Jr. seem to finally get on the same page, hit him with a couple of beautiful passes, and then Lawrence immediately overthrows ETN. It's definitely disappointing that Lawrence wasn't able to get over 300 yards on 42 pass attempts, but that's pretty much what you have to expect. He's a matchup-based starter in 1QB leagues, but remains a solid starter in Superflex. Travis Etienne was disappointing once again. His third straight game under 60 rushing yards and his second under 10 fantasy points. Finished with 12 carries for 27 yards, but salvaged his day through the air, catching 4 passes for 28 yards on 5 targets. Now, granted, it was a tough matchup. The Colts have yet to allow 100 yards and have only allowed 2 rushing touchdowns on the season. So I'm not concerned just yet. But that borderline RB1 status Etienne was flirting with earlier in the season, it's more like a middle-of-the-road RB2 with some upside for spike weeks. Bashel Tootin saw 2 carries for 14 yards, came down with 2 catches, but remained strictly a handcuff. Brian Thomas Jr. finally started looking like his rookie self, finishing with 10 targets, 8 receptions, 90 yards, and a touchdown. He got involved early, catching 3 of 3 targets for 47 yards in the first quarter, and he was making those difficult catches that we were accustomed to last season. Although he did drop one pass that was a little high, got his hands on it, he should have came down with it, but nonetheless. Travis Hunter did see 7 targets, but was only able to turn him into 4 catches for 15 yards. BTJ's performance was promising for a season-long value. I consider him a high-end wide receiver too right now, but need to see a little more consistency before I'm ready to plug him back in as an every-week wide receiver 1. Honestly, Hunter is barely startable as a flex. He obviously has the talent, the athleticism, the explosiveness, but until we see it turn into some fantasy points, you just can't start him. As for the Colts, Daniel Jones looked the best he has since week 2. Jones finished with 22 completions on 30 attempts, 205 yards and 2 touchdowns, and also chipped in 32 yards on 5 carries. He did throw a pick as well. Like I said, Daniel Jones looked the best he had since week 2. He was moving around in the pocket, extending plays, and scored his 4th rushing touchdown on the season. He was a little inconsistent in the middle of the game, but he turned right back into Indiana Jones in the 4th quarter. He was throwing absolute lasers at the start of the 4th quarter, threaded the needle on a beautiful pass to Alec Pierce, then hit Josh Downs with the game-tying touchdown on the very next play. Daniel Jones is a borderline QB1 for the rest of the season and starting pretty much every week in every format. Jonathan Taylor continues to absolutely dominate. Finished with 21 carries, 123 yards, and a touchdown. Plus, he caught all 4 of his targets for 14 yards. This marks his 3rd 100-yard rushing game and his 7th rushing touchdown on the season. What's even more encouraging is he logged his fourth straight game with at least four targets. There's not much to say other than he's locked in. Jonathan Taylor's a contender for that beautiful big gold RB1 overall belt at the end of the season. Michael Pittman had his worst game of the season, finishing with just two catches for 20 yards on three targets. I wouldn't be too overly concerned, but it does keep him in middling wide receiver two territory. Josh Downs was involved early and often in this one, having his best game of the year, but don't get too excited. That only equates to 13.2 fantasy points. It was a second straight game with at least seven targets and at least six catches, but due to that not-so-great duo of low floor and low ceiling, he's a low-end flex at best. He needs to get in the end zone to make your day. Stud rookie Tyler Warren led the team in targets with nine, catching six of them for 63 yards and a touchdown. He's a must-start, top three tight end for the rest of the season. And I'll tell you a little secret, he's not number three. Pitter-patter, let's get at her with some quick hitters. Starting with the Chargers backfield. I don't know what it was today, but there's multiple backfields that made absolutely no sense. Hassan Haskins was reported the starter before the game, but Kamani Vidal absolutely dominated. 70% of snaps, 18 carries, 4 targets, 138 yards, and a touchdown. Haskins was pretty much irrelevant with 5 carries for 23 yards. It's a volatile situation, but Vidal proved that he's a priority. He's startable as a flex, but this really could just turn into another weekly headache. Haskins should be rostered, but you can't start him after this. Tet McMillan had his lowest target total of the season, but he made him count. He finished with just three catches, but scored not one, but two touchdowns, the first two of his career. He remains a wide receiver two with wide receiver one upside, but this offense is still a concern. The touchdowns prove that he does have a ceiling. The inconsistent quarterback play really limits his ceiling. Is there a chance that we see Andy Dalton by the end of the season? DK Metcalf is a touchdown machine. He just came down with a touchdown in his fourth straight game, the longest streak of his career, also had a season-high 9 targets. He's still highly volatile, but the scoring upside is undeniable. As long as he remains Aaron Rodgers' favorite target, he's a solid wide receiver too with upside. The Patriots' backfield has that same maddening energy as the Seahawks. Ramondre Stevenson got a massive 71% snap share, but looked like he was not even running in quicksand. He looked like he was running in cement. Gained only 18 yards on 13 carries. Just like Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet, Trevion Henderson is so obviously the better back, but he saw just 29% of snaps. Gained 36 yards on 9 carries. Efficiency gap is huge, but Mike Vrabel is set on sticking with Stevenson. You're not dropping Henderson, but this inexplicable usage keeps both guys pretty much close to unstartable. Now, they do get the Titans next week, so they're both in flex conversation, but it's a high-stress decision that is built purely on matchup. Is Baker Mayfield the early season favorite for MVP? I mean, how can he not be? No matter the ingredients, Baker's going to bake. After already being down Mike Evans, Jalen McMillan, Chris Godwin, he lost Emeka Egbuka to a hamstring injury and still threw for 256 yards and 2 touchdowns. Baker's arm is basically holding this entire offense together with string and duct tape. He's still a risk. He's likely down as top 4 receivers for a period of time, but he's done enough to still be considered even in one QB leagues while they're out and a near must start when just one of them returns. Rico Dowdle dominated once again. Dowdle totaled over 200 yards for the second straight game and scored again, helping the Panthers take out Dallas in his revenge game. His 473 scrimmage yards over the past two games set a new Panthers record, previously held by some guy named Christian McCaffrey. Here he's pretty good. And when Dowdle was asked his post-game message for the Cowboys, he simply said, "They wasn't buckled up." Dowdle may have Wally Pipped Chuba Hubbard while he's out. And if you don't know what that term means, one, go look it up, and two, you just made me feel really old. And before we get out of here, I will run through those injuries. Garrett Wilson came down with a knee injury. There's not much info on this one, but definitely something you should keep an eye on, especially if Tyrod Taylor winds up making the start. Puka Nacua left the game with an ankle injury after the defender who was trying to prevent him from scoring a touchdown came down on his ankle in the end zone. It doesn't look long-term, but with a week 8-5 for the Rams, I wouldn't be surprised to see him sit out one game and give him 2 weeks to rest up and get completely healthy. Emeka Egbuka, like I mentioned earlier, left the game with a hamstring injury and didn't return. There's no word as to how severe it is at this point in time, but I would not be surprised to see him miss multiple games. Similar with Calvin Ridley, left the game with a hamstring injury. Going to be out multiple weeks, but the problem is with Ridley, he's getting up there in age. He's in his 30s, which is ancient for a wide receiver. Not for a person, though. I want to throw that out there as I'm getting close to 40. It's going to be harder for him to come back. It's going to be take longer and honestly probably a higher chance of reoccurrence. Marvin Harrison Jr. left the game with a concussion. I would assume he's out for week 8. These things vary from player to player, and we honestly don't know. I would assume hopefully back week 9, but you can't take anything for granted when it comes to a concussion. And apparently Juwan Jennings broke some news about some injuries he's dealing with. Yeah, apparently he's playing through 5 broken ribs, 2 ankle sprains, and a shoulder injury. That's according to Juwan Jennings. So take that for what it's worth. That's going to be a wrap for week 6 of Sunday Best. I appreciate every single one of you listening. I will be back again next week, week 7. Same bat time, same bat channel. And remember, folks, choose love, not hate.